When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
Great faces when they drop jaw. Food chain says top dog. We don't listen to y'all, this the outlaws. We don't listen to y'all, this the outlaws. Make them scream out loud. Cause a ruckus in the crowd like a foul ball. Tune in if the charge for the outlaws. Tune in if the charge for the outlaws.
Welcome to a special edition of The Outlaws. This is Darvio the Kingpin Morrow. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheOutlawsRadio. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Outlaws Radio. If I sound a little different, I'm a little under the weather, dealing with sinuses. It's not the Rona. I don't have the Rona. But I'm still here to make sure that we entertain you fine people who listen to this program. So we have a very special episode today. We taped some interviews at an event called Fan Expo here in Cleveland, and we got some great interviews for you all. I think you're really gonna love it. I did some of these interviews, and some of them one of our co-hosts, Robin O'Malley, joined us as well. We were able to talk to some incredible people. Thank you, as always, to Fan Expo for being so hospitable. We have been, we've participated before, but it actually was Fan Expo, which was then known as Wizard World, was actually the last event in Cleveland before everything shut down because of COVID. So it's almost like a Comic-Con, basically. I think that would be the best comparison. And we were able to get some really cool interviews. So there may be some listeners right now who are familiar with a movie called Clerks. And you might be familiar with Clerks 2 as well. So the first interview that we are going to go to right now is with one of the stars of the movie Clerks, Brian O'Halloran. And we're going to go to that right now. All right. We have a very special guest with us right now. I can almost guarantee that you have seen what he's been in. I'm going to let him introduce himself to all of you right now.
Hey guys, it's me, Brian O'Halloran. I'm really not even supposed to be here today, but you may know me from those films called Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, and a bunch of others.
So, of course, we got to talk about Clerks. What is it like to be in a cult classic? People love that movie. When you were first filming it, did you think it was going to take off like that?
No, when we were first making it, we all had regular 9-to-5 jobs. So the first hurdle was it going to get done? And then the second thing was, well, now it's done, who's going to see it? Because, you know, we were just some guys from Jersey, you know, with a 16-millimeter camera and, you know, and some guys who came down from Canada to help and be a part of it. And thankfully, Kevin and Dave and Scott, who went to film school, knew what they wanted to do with it, and they followed along with it. And it was that kind of time in movies in 93 and 94 where a lot of these independent small films kind of broke out to be commercial success, like El Mariachi and Reservoir Dogs and thing, you know, Slacker and a bunch of others. So the industry in general, the distribution industry in general, were looking for these kind of productions that were made on their own, independently, no help from them. And then they would go to these film festivals, and then they would be bought. And a lot of the times the filmmaker's like, look, I just want to pay my bills kind of thing. And they would get a steal of a deal kind of thing and get it out there. And then we got out there, a black and white movie for that matter, about a dude at a convenience store and the dude at the video store next door. And it's a day in the life slice of what that was about. Just connected with people.
So, and that actually goes right into my next question. What do you think it is about that movie that connected with people to the extent that they love it to this day? They still watch it. They still quote lines in the movie. Like, what do you think it was that made that movie so special?
Well, you've either worked that type of job where you worked retail, or you've been into those type of convenience stores or those kind of shops where the people kind of know that they don't want to be there, that they have better ideals for themselves, that they know that they're just going through the motions. And then that's also the time, you know, in your early 20s where you're out of school and you're supposed to have a degree and you're overeducated, underworked kind of thing, where what happens now? There's really no handbook as to what goes on next. And I think to this day it still happens where kids get pumped out of schools and they don't know where they want to go next. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about your origin story. Tell people a little bit about where you're from and when did you think that, oh, wow, this is what I want to do for a living?
Well, I mean, my family, all of them, my two older brothers, one who's 6 years and one who's 9 years older than me, and my parents all came from Ireland and emigrated to New York City. So my father emigrated first in 65, and then my mother with my two older brothers followed afterwards. Then I was born in New York City in 1969. And then we lived in New York City until 1979. Then we moved over to Jersey, northern Jersey for 4 years in the Palisade Park area, and then down to the central Jersey area in the Old Bridge area, not far, like 20 minutes north of where the Quick Stop is and that whole area. So in growing up in like an Irish kind of Catholic kind of family, so singing and playing music and watching movies, that's a storytelling is kind of in our genetics. It's in our makeup kind of thing. So acting as a kid in you know, middle school was, I did the plays then. In high school, I didn't really do any of the plays until like junior year in high school and then senior year as well. Went to college, local community college, took all the theater I could, and then just started going to local community theaters to audition and having success in local community theaters and doing some off-Broadway stuff that I was able to parlay that into other things. And then Kevin Smith, this young guy, came a dropout out of Vancouver Film School, brought his two film school buddies. He'd written a script about the job that he was living every day, about being the convenience store clerk, and taking an aspect of that, putting it in a script, auditioned at a theater I had worked out of, and I auditioned, and I got the gig, and the rest is history.
So how did things change for you career-wise after Clerks came out and took off like that?
Well, I mean, it took a while for it to really get that kind of buzz. And it wasn't theatrically, it did okay. I mean, for the percentage, for the return of investment, it did killer business because it was bought for $250,000 but made $3 million in its box office. But where it made most of its money, though, was the video rental, you know, when VHSs and Blockbusters were still around and stuff like that. So that's where it was passed. A tape would be bought or passed around from place to place. College campuses were a huge fertile ground for that movie to be passed around from person to person. I mean, even back in 94, there was the celebration of Woodstock kind of thing, the anniversary Woodstock concert, where they had a whole weekend of bands playing up in Woodstock. And at night, they would show movies, and this was one of the movies that was shown to, you know, tens of thousands of stoned and who knows what they were on, dudes and chicks just sleeping out on that giant lawn again. And it was that kind of word of mouth thing that it just connected. So what it did was, I mean, I went out to LA to try to do the young actor thing and get an agent and meet with different studios to try to and I did. I auditioned and stuff like that. And it was a good, definitely a massive foot in the door compared to other actors, young actors at the time. This was something that was known to the film festival world, a movie that I had done. And it was also, they had seen my work. So they kind of knew what I could do.
So, obviously, you have a great resume of films that you've been in, not only Clerks, but other great films as well. Is there a particular role that you would consider your favorite that you enjoyed portraying the most?
I mean, I do enjoy when Kevin writes for the character Dante, I'm not going to lie. But I enjoy everything that Kevin has given me to do. You know, Grant Hicks, the news reporter. You know, Gil Hicks from Mallrats. We gave the name Sean Hicks to the guy from Chasing Amy. But I enjoy those roles. I mean, there's a movie I did called Brutal Massacre, a comedy that came out in 2009. It's a mockumentary about the making of a horror film. So I play the first AD. So you're seeing the crew make this really bad horror film. And it's with David Naughton and Gunnar Hansen and Ellen Sandwiss, all these great iconic horror film icons. And it was kind of a fun, it was a fun tongue-in-cheek look at the film industry, which I enjoyed playing.
Do you enjoy like the comedy genre, or are there other genres that you enjoy more? Like,
oh no, I definitely enjoy comedy. Comedy, although it's very hard to do right. I mean, not everybody can do comedy, but I enjoy doing it. You know, serious drama is always great, and if I can do a period piece, which I've done with plays, I do all the time. I enjoy those, but. You know, there's not one over the other. I'm more known for comedies, obviously, when it comes to films. But when it comes to theater, I like doing more drama. Mm-hmm.
So for anybody who's listening, who wants to get into this business, who wants to have the success that you've had, what advice would you give them?
You got to put in the work. You got to put in the work. And in that regard, what I mean is you got to research. If you want to be in the acting side of it, then you got to find yourself some really great coaches and great teachers to put you through your paces. If you want to be in the writing game, write things, take it to a local theater or whatever, and they'll workshop your stuff. You'll hear other actors say the words that you want to see get produced, and that's a good way to do the work. If you're talking about producing, go to the film festivals and talk to other producers. And you know, there's a lot of paying your dues where you're doing things without any pay and little sleep and barely any food. But if you are a filmmaker who wants to do something independently and you're asking for a lot of favors, let's say, the one thing I always try to tell them is feed them well. McDonald's, a pizza, that ain't gonna cut it. Find people who have parents or someone who has connections to a restaurant to donate really good hot fit, you know, food. A really good meal will go a long way when you're asking people to do 12, 14-hour days for you.
Absolutely. Let everybody know how to keep in touch with you on social media, all that good stuff.
Sure. So you could reach out to me through Twitter and Instagram at Brian, the letter C as in Christopher, Brian C. O'Halloran at both Twitter and Instagram, and the Brian C. O'Halloran on Facebook.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me.
All right. Stay tuned. When we come back, we are going to go to more of our interviews from Fan Expo right here in Cleveland. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Outlaws.
Have you ever wondered what really goes on behind the scenes in the entertainment industry? Join me, Victoria Henley from Cycle 19 of America's Next Top Model, for an inside look at fashion shows, concerts, and a wide variety of events throughout the United States, featuring exclusive and insightful interviews with both seasoned and up-and-coming artists. Listen in and subscribe to Backstage Pass with Victoria, an FCB radio podcast on Apple, Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Real talk, real conversations.
We got the heat.
Giving it real.
Hell yeah.
This is the Outlaws Radio Show.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Outlaws. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. And for those of you who are listening to us on Apple, make sure that you leave us a 5-star review and a comment, please. It's very important for the algorithm. And for those of you who have done so, thank you oh so very much. And now we're going to jump right back into our interviews from Fan Expo right here in Cleveland. We have another Clerks alumni that we are going to talk to in just a second. His name is Jeff Anderson, and we're going to go to that interview right now. All right, we have a very special guest here with us. You know the movies that he has been in some cult classics. Jeff Anderson, welcome. Thanks for spending time with us.
Thank you for having me.
So talk a little bit about what the experience has been like to be in a movie like Clerks.
I mean, it's almost impossible to get across to people what this ride has been like. Like, we literally, six of us, in this little crappy store, made a little crappy movie that for whatever reason has caught on. And, you know, it's 30 years later and you're asking me questions about it. It's the most bizarre, surreal thing.
Why do you think it caught on so much?
You know, I think it was a timing issue for Clerks. At the time, sort of independent film was just breaking. You know, you had Pulp Fiction that just came out, and Pulp Fiction really got the story started as far as independent filmmaking. So I think it was just a matter of timing, and it was good timing. I think if you had made Clerks now, it might not have become what it became, because you have so many more venues and so many more people are doing it. I think really just, like I said, it was about that time, and it was about the backstory that it only cost, you know, $30,000 or whatever.
So when did you know when you wanted to get into acting?
I never knew. I'm still trying to figure it out. that was the thing, is I had never acted a day in my life before that movie. I never saw that coming. I never expected that. I was never even in a high school play. So that was my first acting gig. It turned out okay.
That's a hell of a first gig. So for anybody who's listening who wants to get into the field, what advice would you give them?
I say, man, do it. Nowadays, there are so many more venues to show it. If you're holding your iPhone right now, if you have an iPhone, you can literally make a movie. And, you could immediately throw it up on YouTube and immediately get people's reaction to it. I think now is a great time to make films. And, we're here doing this thing, and I meet a lot of people who get inspired by Clerks. It's easy to get inspired by it because it's so crappy that you can do it too. You too can do this. So I just tell people, do everything. People that want to be actors or whatever, act in anything, because you never know what's going to hit. None of us would have predicted the success Clerks was going to have. So if you want to be an actor, say yes to everything. Do it. Just go and have fun.
I love that.
All right. Let everybody know how to keep up with you on social media. Follow what you got going on.
You got to send me smoke signals. I am not on social media. You're not going to get me with that. So, I live kind of off in the woods. If you want to get a message to me, you got to send it by pigeon.
All right. Well, thank you so much, man, for spending this time with us. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Next up, you might have heard of a TV show called The Office. We were able to interview one of the stars of the TV show The Office, Dave Koegner. It was a very interesting interview. We had a limited amount of time because he had another engagement to go to, but he was gracious enough to give us what he had, and we were able to get a little bit of content for you all. So let's go to that interview right now.
Darview, I'm Dave Koegner. I'm from show business. How are you? Whammy! You know, from Anchorman in The Office. All right, Darview, what's happening?
Yes, sir. Talk about what it was like to be on an amazing show, talking about The Office.
Number one, be grateful every day. So anytime I was on The Office, I'm grateful because it's a show business. And anytime you're working, you have to remind yourself, this is not a job. It's a play, a teleplay, a screenplay, a play, which means what? To what, Darview? To play. Play. Yes, and let's do it every day. Next question. What's your name again, person?
My name is Robin.
Robin's here too, gang.
I am, yes. So what would you say to somebody who is following in your footsteps?
Don't follow my footsteps. Make your own footsteps. Read the book Outliers and also listen to the audiobook On Writing by Stephen King. That's my advice. Also, I've never asked anyone for advice. Yeah. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Do it. Don't ask. Do it. Yes. Darview, next question.
Yes, sir. I know you got to get out of here soon, so I'll make this real quick. When did you know that acting was what you
wanted? When I was 13.
13?
13. I watched Saturday Night Live for the first time, and I also watched Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and I thought, oh, my God, this exists? Oh, my God. Comedy can be this brilliant? That's what I want to do. And I stood by a tree in my backyard probably within the next 6 months. As the sun was going down, I put my hand on that tree and I said to myself, I'm going to do something. I'm going to meet Darview. Whammy!
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. One of the cool things about Fan Expo is that you have all sorts of people that come there. You have actors and actresses. You have comic book creators. You have voice actors. And that's the next interview that we're going to go to right now. I am certain that most of you are familiar with the character that this person plays. And it was really cool to be able to spend some time and talking to him a little bit. So we are going to go to our interview with Charles Martinet, the voice of Super Mario.
All right, so I have a couple of friends who are going to freak out right now because they love this game. I'm going to let him introduce himself to the audience because he can do it better than I can.
Hello to all my friends in Cleveland. It's me, Super Mario. Woohoo! Mamma mia, you're number one. Ha-ha! See you in my games. Yippee!
Talk a little bit about how much fun it's been to be a part of something as legendary as Super Mario.
You know, it is so great. I am so honored, and I have such joy doing what I do. And that's what I wish for everybody, that you find what you love to do and you go for it, because life is such a beautiful gift, you know? And I think always, if you're looking for happiness and you're being your own best friend in that pursuit, then happiness is going to find you when you least expect it.
Absolutely. So when did you start with the franchise? How long have you been with it?
It's been 31 years. I've been the voice of many childhoods for 3-4 generations, and it's really such a joy. You know, you do what you love in life, and it just everything just seems to work beautifully.
Absolutely. So, how did you get into, you know, the voice acting thing? Was it something that you always knew you wanted to do, or did, like how did this happen?
I was going to be a lawyer or a professor at college. And I instead took a turn when a friend of mine said, come and take an acting class from me. And I did, and I shook like a leaf. I was terrified. I was a very shy person, very quiet, and I just was so terrified. And people said, wow, how come you're not nervous? And that started me going, what? And then when I didn't get a part that I wanted to play, Oberon in Midsummer Night's Dream. That failure led to the fire being lit in my belly to become an actor. And then the rest is beautiful history. And voiceover just happened because I was doing a commercial and a producer said, "Do you do voiceover?" And I said, "Sure," because I never say no, you know? And there it was. And it was like, "Oh, just buy hardware, the right item at the right price right now," you know? And through the course in Nintendo, you know, they've asked me, invited me to Luigi number one, ho ho, and Wario, have a rotten day. And well, Luigi, everybody cheats but me. One gift after another. So I'm very grateful to Nintendo and, of course, to these shows like Cleveland Fan Expo. You get to see people having a wonderful time, full of joy and happiness. People in cosplay. There's a Mario there. There's a Princess Peach over there. And who knows, the two of them might meet and they might end up husband and wife. That's happened before.
Absolutely. I won't hold you up, but last question. For anybody who's listening who is trying to get into the business, what advice would you have for someone that may be trying to follow in your footsteps?
Well, I say follow your heart. You know, if it really brings you joy, then go for it. There's a wonderful webpage by D. Bradley Baker, a marvelous actor. iwanttobeavoiceactor.com. And just type that in. You learn about having to build a character, how to keep the integrity to a character, how to put a voice to something, how to make the business tape that will help you get more jobs. So iwanttobeavoiceactor.com. That's what I'd say.
Absolutely. Do you have any website, social media, anything that people can keep up with you on?
Oh, well, that's Charles Martinet on Facebook. Charles Martinet, It's a Me on Instagram. I always do videos like I did a video of this wonderful person who made these gorgeous Marios that we have right here at the booth at the Cleveland Expo. So that's one. And then Twitter, it's Charles Martinet, MARTINET.
Thank you so much, Charles Martinet, the voice of Super Mario, for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for playing my games. You're number one. Woohoo!
Stay tuned. We have more to come in the Outlaws from Fan Expo Cleveland. We'll be right back.
Yo, what's up? Bring the noise right here. Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. You are tuned in the Outlaws radio show.
Yeah, this is Chris Gotti, and you're listening to the number one radio show, The Outlaws. You heard me? Adventure Music supports Chris Gotti. Go check him out.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, comedian, actress Coco Brown, and you're listening to the Outlaws radio show.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy, SNMJT, and I'm with Outlaws.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
These days, it seems like everybody's talking, but no one is actually listening to the things they're saying. Critical thinking isn't dead, but it's definitely low on oxygen. Join me, Kira Davis, on Just Listen to Yourself every week as we reason through issues big and small, critique our own ideas, and learn to draw our talking points all the way out to their logical conclusions. Subscribe to Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis and FCB Radio Podcast on Apple, on Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Outlaws Radio Show.
Welcome back to a special edition of the Outlaws featuring our interviews from Fan Expo here in Cleveland. And to close it out, we are going to go to our interview with Dan Parent, who is with the illustrious, the legendary Archie Comics. We're going to go to that right now. We have a very special guest here with us. I'm sure you're familiar with his work. I'm going to let him introduce himself to all of you right now.
Hi, my name is Dan Parent, and I'm primarily known as a writer and artist for Archie Comics.
Awesome. So when did you first get your love for comics? Was it something that started as a kid? Was it something that happened later in life? When did you develop it?
Definitely as a kid. I was probably 5 years old when I just started to get my first glimpse at comics and loving them. I started out reading Harvey comics, which were Richie Rich and Casper, and those were got me into comics. And then I moved on to Archie and then superheroes and all that. But always had a love of comics from like my first glance at a comic book, and it never changed. So then from that point on, I was just always drawing anything I could draw on, and I was always drawing stuff from comics, copying stuff, and again, that never waned. I just kept loving to do that. So that continued through school, and you know, grade school, high school, and then I was lucky enough to go to art school. I wanted to pursue it as a career, and it worked out. I went to art school, and they Archie came. I went to the Joe Kubert School, which is in New Jersey. It's a comic book art school, and Archie came looking for artists, and I was lucky enough to get chosen.
So when you had your love for comics when you were young, when did you know that, hold on, wait a minute, I could actually do this as a profession? Was it when you were in art school, or did it develop, did the light bulb go off before that?
I guess it kind of went off in art school, because before I went to art school, I started to think I should be practical and go to regular college and get a regular job. I did go to school to be a teacher. And I went for about a year to study that. And I just, you know, it just wasn't clicking with me. Like, I kept focusing on all of my artwork more than anything else. So my mom talked me into it. She goes, you know, you should go to the Joe Kubert School. You've always wanted to go there. And I had two friends who went there, actually, too. And I was like, you know, I decided to make a play for it and go. And it was the best decision I ever made, because when I went there, I knew that it was exactly what I wanted to do. So, and then you go there and you're not sure, you know, no one knows if they're going to make it, but you go there, and I was just happy to be a part of it and part of drawing all the time. And I kind of figured I'd get somewhere. I figured if I really poured everything into it, something would happen. And fortunately, before I graduated, it did. I got hired, and so I had a job when I graduated. So that was really nice.
So, and I know it's always hard for artists to pick this, because it's like choosing between your kids. But do you have a favorite comic book that you've worked on, or a favorite character, something that you've enjoyed the most in your career?
I mean. Yeah, that is a hard one, because a lot of times what you're currently working on is a thing you like really love. But I was just talking to somebody about, like, one of my projects I really loved was doing Archie Meets Batman 66, because it was two things I really loved, which was Batman, especially like the old time Batman, and to team it with Archie was a really super fun project. And then I did like a series called Love Showdown, which was my first kind of like big, huge project that got a lot of publicity and a lot of attention. And this is in the early 90s, when the internet wasn't really big yet, so this happened pretty much organically. We did the storyline where Archie was going to finally choose someone else other than Betty and Veronica, and it just, that's just the whole concept got so much attention in a lot of, like, you know, at that time we were on like all these different TV shows, and it was on newspapers, and it just sort of struck a chord with people. And that was really exciting, because not just the fact that we got a lot of attention, but the fact that the storyline connected with so many people. So that was, that's one of my things I always go to when I talk about like favorite stories.
Mm-hmm. So, and you mentioned that, you know, that was pre-internet, or the internet taking over. So, you know, I remember, you know, when you're being a kid, like that was one of the top dream jobs that most kids had, to be able to like work on cartoons or work on comics and stuff like that. Talk a little bit about how the internet age has changed the nature of the industry, the nature of the business.
Well, with the internet, I mean, with social media especially, you know, it's a whole different world. We can promote ourselves. Like, you know, I can go on Facebook and post where I'm going to be on Instagram. You also have sort of have like an online, like a website, so I've got like an online portfolio. In the old days, I had to like walk around with a portfolio case and just show my work by hand. You know, now there's a place people can go to look at it. So things being digital, it's a lot less expensive, it's a lot easier to promote. Also a lot more competition, because everybody's online. So there you've got that too. But the internet has been a really good tool. It's been a good tool because, again, like I kickstarted a project, which is something I wouldn't have been able to do before with the internet. So the internet definitely has a lot more pros than cons. And, you know, social media can be kind of like a disgusting place sometimes, too. But for the most part, I'd say that, I've had a good experience online, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So now, keeping with that, as far as, like, the actual, like, the product itself, do you prefer hand drawing, hand versus using the computer, or vice versa?
That's a good question. I do start everything out by hand, probably because I am old school, so I do start it out by hand. But I have, when I send a file in, or when I finish a job, they want a digital file. I can't just send them like I still do draw pencils pages, and I do send them to an inker sometimes. So that's still pretty much I'm only dealing with physical work. But for the, like, when I'm doing a cover or a special, most projects, I draw it by hand, and then I ink it, and then I scan it into the computer, and I clean it up and color it in Photoshop and digitize and do all my special, like, effects in Photoshop. So I'm basically doing both, starting it out by hand, finishing it digitally. And that seems to be really work for me, because I also sell my original artwork, especially at conventions like this. So if you don't have original artwork, you really can't sell the digital stuff, you know. So it's better financially, and I just like drawing with a pencil. I like holding a pencil in my hand. I mean, I've drawn a few things online digitally, and I can do it, but I just much prefer to use a pencil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was a comic book fan growing up. I was a DC guy, so yeah, you know, I loved Superman and Batman and all of that. What do you think today, as we're in the internet, in this digital world, where do you think the state of the comic book industry is today in this digital world?
Well, it's weird, because I mean, I know comic books aren't selling what they used to sell, you know, because any kind of like paper product, magazine book, you know, isn't selling what it used to sell. You have digital sales to sort of offset that a little bit, but it's a strange time, because even though you're not getting the sales we used to get, you know, fandom is bigger than ever. Like, comic book conventions are huge. There's conventions all the time, and everyone that, you know, all, you know, that goes there does really well. So there's a lot of fandom out there. And even though it might not translate to actual book sales, you know, you have more movies and more TV shows than ever based on comic books. So I guess there's like, that's like the trade-off, sort of. So yeah, I would like comics to sell more. I think we all would like, but you know, they need the comics to fuel the other projects. So I don't think that, you know, comic books are going to go anywhere.
Right. Is there anything that you're working on right now? Any projects that you're excited to talk about?
I'm just working currently on, we're doing Sabrina's 60th anniversary this year, a special one-shot issue. So I'm working on that, writing and drawing that. And that'll be fun, because I love Sabrina. Yeah. She's one of our most popular characters. So it's fun to sort of just celebrate one of our best characters. And that'll be out in September.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So for people who are listening, who may be younger or older, who are interested in doing what you're doing, what advice would you give them for people who are trying to accomplish what you've accomplished?
I would just tell people, if you're interested in being an artist, just draw all the time. Draw everything and anything. You just keep drawing, because you have to just draw a lot to get good. There's no easy way around it. I mean, some people are better than others. Some people have to do a little less than what someone else might have to do. But I think anybody who's a published artist has to draw a lot. And then if you can, you know, take that drawing ability, you also have to be able to meet deadlines and work with other people. So even if you're the best artist in the world, if you can't meet a deadline or work with an editor, you're not going to work. So yeah, you have to sort of learn those rules. But if you love to draw, it's there's work out there for people that can draw well.
Awesome. Let everybody know how to follow you on social media if they want to see more of your work, your portfolio, all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, there's my website, danparent.com, which I have not updated in a while, but you can still see my portfolio. Facebook, just look up Dan Parent. I don't know my, you know, and then on Twitter, it's @ParentDaniel, and Instagram @ParentDaniel. And I'm really easy to find online, so.
Awesome. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much to everybody who spent time with us on our show today. We definitely appreciate it.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules, because even when you have events like this and you know you're going to be doing press, there's still so many things going on. There's so many obligations that they have to do. So I definitely don't take it lightly that they were willing to, that they all were willing to spend that time with us and talk to you, because that's the most important thing. It's not just about the fact that they were spending time with us, but they were also spending time with you. So I want to thank all of our guests today for doing just that. I also want to send a special shout out once again to Jerry Milani and everybody at Fan Expo Cleveland. For being so hospitable to us. We really appreciate it. It means a lot. Thank you so much for that. All right. Thank you, our listening audience, for joining us. I hope that you enjoyed it. It was, I think personally, you know, I might be a little biased, but I think if I do say so myself, it was a great episode, and we had a lot of fun putting this episode together and talking to all of these incredible, illustrious people. So, all right, we are out of here. We'll see you next time. Peace.
The FCB Radio Network, first-class broadcasting worldwide.